comes to not having a lot of people at church. We had a Sunday morning and we had a blizzard in Ellesmere. So we only had three people that came to church that morning, and Keith was one of them, and he was an old widow rancher in his 80s. So I just did the sermon as normal. I just did a 45-minute, hour-long sermon. He came up to me after the sermon. He said, "That was pretty good, but can I give you a little bit of advice?" And I said, "Sure, Keith." And he said, "Well, when I go out there to feed in the mornings and I only have two or three cows show up, I don't feed them the whole bale." He said, "I just feed them a little bit of the bale." So you might want to keep that in mind. And so what he was saying to me was that if there's only three people at church, maybe keep the sermon to 10 minutes, not a whole hour. And I said, "Well, I'll keep that in mind, Keith." Well, we're going to go on in our series on the love languages. And we started this a couple weeks ago of talking about the five love languages. And we started in John 13, looked at verses 34 through 35. But I've been talking about, from the book, The Five Love Languages, how that we each speak a different love language, each one of us. And it is the way that we communicate. And it's just exactly like the languages that we speak, whether you speak English or you speak French or whatever that is. If you're going to try to communicate with somebody else and you don't speak their native tongue, it's pretty difficult. You know, if you've ever been in those scenarios before where you have two people who don't speak the same language, like I said before, it turns into a lot of charades and pointing at things because you just can't communicate. And it's the same thing that we've been talking about with the love languages. That if you're trying to tell somebody, "I love you," and you don't speak their love language, then they just don't understand it. And that is why that you will have people that will be in counseling and they will say that, you know, "We've been married for 20, 30 years, and this person has never shown me any type of love." And that other person will be sitting there, their spouse, and they'll be shocked and say, "What are you talking about? I've done this and this over the years and this," but it's not their love language. And so to them, they've never been told that they are loved by this other person. And as I said, these love languages work in all relationships. They're not just husband-wife, you know, relationships. It's your grandchildren. It can be your children. It can be your parents. It can be your siblings. It can be even friends and, you know, that are extended and that are like family. And so it works in all those relationships. But the problem is, if we don't know that, there's going to be a breakdown of communication and you're not able to tell that person that you love them. And I would say this, life would be a lot less confusing if there was subtitles. You know what I'm talking about? Back in the 70s, early 80s, you remember the big dishes that everybody had that you would get to watch television? I mean, these things were, you know, this big satellite, they called them. You had them outside your house, and that thing was, what, like 10 feet wide? Well, my friend, his family got one, and we would watch these foreign films, and I really liked all the kung fu karate films that were out there. And so you would watch them, and of course, this satellite went all over the world, you know, and to change the channel of the satellite, remember what you had to do? You had to go out there and turn the satellite physically. I mean, this 10-foot satellite, you had to turn it, and somebody was inside saying, "Go back," and so until you can hit the signal. But these foreign films, and especially these karate, kung fu films, they always had these subtitles down at the bottom because they didn't voice over English, and so you just had to read the whole thing. And I will tell you that I like that in technology today because most of your TVs have what? Closed caption. And so you can put that on. I am deaf. I am absolutely just deaf. I have too many guns and loud music and diesel tractors and all those things, so I cannot hear at all. And it's getting worse all the time, but it's been like that for years. So I will put on the closed caption when we watch anything so I can read it down at the bottom. I get so much more out of it. We went to the movies, it's been years and years ago, I can't remember what the movie was, but we went there, and of course it doesn't have closed caption, and I was just absolutely lost of what was going on watching the movie, because in my ears, it just sounds like blah, 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 all the time, and so I have to reach, you know, or lean over to Stacey and say, What's going on? What? Because she's my interpreter. We have learned that when I go to the doctor, especially if it's going to be a female doctor and she has kind of a lower tone voice, that she has to go with me, Stacy does, so she can hear for me and interpret. Because you know what it's like when, you know, somebody asks you a question or says something to you and you've asked them to repeat it like the third time, and then you look at them, you just go, yeah, yes, yes. And that's not a good thing when you go to the doctor and you're just guessing at the, you know, for answers because you can't hear them. Or if they tell you, and then we had a situation where I had to go to the doctor, and then what she was telling me, I kept saying, can you repeat that? Can you tell me that again? And she would tell me again, and I still didn't hear. And so I came home and Stacy said, what did she say? And I said, I'm not for sure. So she has to go with me just to be my ears. But it would be a lot easier if you're talking to somebody and there is these subtitles, because you know what I'm saying, that you're sometimes listening to somebody and they're talking, and especially if it's your spouse and you just aren't getting what they are telling you. That's not the way life works. And so we're going through, of course, these five love languages that Gary Chapman talks about in his book. And as I've said over the last couple of weeks, that I believe this is a very, very effective tool in any relationship, but especially when Stacy and I have done marriage counseling over the years, because it is so true that people speak a language and that they, a lot of times, as I said, they don't have their spouse speaking that back to them when it comes to love language. And so there's the five that we've talked about, words of affirmation. That was last week. This week, we're going to talk about quality time. Number three, receiving gifts. Number four, acts of service. And then number five, physical touch. And as I said, we at least know one of these languages. So you only have to learn the other four. So because you know one of them. And as I've said, why is this so important? Because love is a basic human need. I don't care how rough and tough that you think that you are. You need love in your life. And either love is going to grow or it's going to die. It either develops or, as I said the last couple of weeks, it deteriorates, just like a plant. If you don't nurture it, it will die. And so when people have been married for whether it's 6 months or 25 years and they haven't taken care of that, and then they're shocked one day when they wake up and go, it's like a plant that you haven't watered or put in the sunlight, and they say, what? Why is this way? Why is this dying? Because you haven't taken care of it over a certain amount of time. And so as I've talked, that he uses this illustration in his book with the love tank, and I've had my gas can up here, that each of us have a love tank that needs to be filled. And when your love language is being spoke to you, then your gas tank is filled. And just like with a vehicle, as I've said, that your vehicle, if you don't have fuel in it, then it's not going to go anywhere. It's going to be stalled on the side of the road. And people feel the exact same way. That if their love tank, if you want to call it that, is not full, then they're going to feel like that they're just absolutely empty. And you've got marriages that dry up, as we talked. You got relationships that break apart. There's physical and mental deterioration. But on the upside of that, if a person feels like they're loved and their tank is full, they're going to feel valued. They're going to feel like they're needed. They're going to feel like their life is fulfilled. And so that is why it's so important to fill somebody's love tank. So today going on, we're going to look at words of affirmation. And or last week, I'm sorry, I'm jumping ahead of myself. Words of affirmation was from last week. And what does affirmation mean? It means to affirm something. It is to confirm something that is true and to strengthen it, is to add value. And that means that you're going to build somebody up with the words that you say. And I had the video last week in the commercial, and it had a slogan with it, and that is that sharing works. Sharing works. And if you remember that there was a lady that was trying to get a candy bar or something out of a vending machine, and it hung up in there, and so she was going to give up, and the guy came along and he said, you can do it, get back in there, fight for that thing. And so he's building her up, and she goes back and she starts kicking it and gets it out of the vending machine. Everybody's, yeah, because that is the way that it is for words of affirmation for some people, that if you tell them, you can do this, I'm behind you, I believe in you, that fills up their love tank enough that they are able to move on in life because words build up. So today, now getting to the second point, that's going to be quality time. And I'm just going to use one verse here as we start out in Philippians 2:44. It says in Philippians, each of you should not only look to your own interests, but also to the interests of others. Paul, underneath the inspiration of the Holy Spirit, is telling a church, he says, listen to me. He said, you are a family. You're working together as this church. And it isn't just about you. You need to make a decision to look after the best of somebody else, their own interests, what they need. And so to discover what somebody needs, you have to do some investigation. You have to be awake. You have to be looking and listening that this person needs this. And it's not just about my interests. It's about somebody else. And I'm going to make that a priority. So what is quality time? Well, I think we can all agree that time is important to all of us. Benjamin Franklin said, do not squander time, for it is the stuff life is made of. Because the thing about time is, it doesn't make any difference how much money that you have. You can be Bill Gates. You cannot buy time. You cannot add time to the end of the day, no matter how much money you have. There's only 24 hours in a day. And when it comes to your life, you can't add extra time onto it. And so that is why it is so important, because giving the gift of time is really giving the gift of life. You're giving your life to somebody else and you're saying, this is what I have and I can't add any more to it. And it is valuable. And so I am giving that to you, the gift of time. And really when it comes to it, that quality time is when you give somebody your undivided attention, your time, your attention that you're giving to somebody else. And quality time has to do with a fixed attention and that you're focused on this person. And so in this time that I have, I am focusing on you. I'm giving you my time. I'm making you a priority. And it's not about proximity, it's about attention. So when I'm spending time with somebody, that doesn't mean that I'm just there beside them. I'm with you. I'm here. It means that you're actually focusing on that person and their interests. It means that you're making somebody a priority. Now, as I said last week, that when it comes to these love languages that we speak, each one of them that we're going to talk about are going to have different, I call like dialects below them. So when you're talking about quality time, it can mean a lot of different things to a lot of different people, and it can look different. So the way somebody that, you know, that their love language is quality time, it looks like this to them because that is their dialect of that language. And so each one of us speak a little bit different dialect. This is interesting. I found this years ago on the internet, and it was a lengthy article, and it is over the different dialects that are in the United States. And I don't know, they did this study on this, and it was pretty in-depth. But if you look at this map here of the United States, it's broke up into different areas. And they say that in each one of those areas, that there are different dialects that are being spoken. And so I had to make sure about this week. What's the difference between an accent and a dialect? An accent, it says, is pronunciation of words. It's a pattern. So you have some people that will have certain accents. And usually that follows people groups. When it comes to dialects, it is grammar and vocabulary plus accent. So it's the way that you say things. It's what you call things even. When we were out in Michigan, it was interesting because we would be talking to somebody that was from Michigan and they would start to look at you and they would just start to smile. They couldn't control their smile. And you would kind of be looking at them and you'd keep on talking. And then finally they'd say, well, I have to stop you. where are you from? Your accent, I've never heard an accent like that before. And I would say, I don't have an accent. And they would say, yes, you do. You have an accent. Now, I slur my words and call things weird names and everything. So, okay, take me out of the equation. Stacy, though, can talk English, all right? And they would say the same thing to her. They would say, where is your accent from? And we would say, we're from Nebraska. And they would just laugh about it, or certain words that we would say or we would be talking. Now, I couldn't really pick up any Michigan accent a little bit because they have kind of an Eastern, I would call it, like, instead of water, they say water. So they've kind of got that going on, some of the people do. But I don't, we got asked, I mean, maybe hundreds of times, where are accents from? Now, if you look at the map here, and I'll have Stacy focus in on the next one there, if you can see it. This is Nebraska. Isn't this interesting? Because in the middle there of Nebraska, there is a different dialect that is being spoken. That's what they say. And they use the illustration there of saying wash. Now, you can read through it, and it doesn't make you, I mean, I would say wash. I don't even understand in my hearing how that is. And somebody else will say whoosh, or I don't exactly even understand it. But one of the examples that they use is wash. And so in that breakup there, I don't even know where that is on the map there. Maybe Ogallala? That, you know, everybody on the other side of Ogallala speaks a little bit different than people on in the center of Nebraska. I don't know for sure. But it's interesting how people spend. This is probably taxpayer money at good work here that they figured this out. I don't know. It's interesting, though. But you know where this really shows up is when you go down to Texas or go down south. Have you ever been down there and talked to somebody? Okay. Years ago, this is way back when we first started, first time we ever went hog hunting, me and four other buddies went down to Texas. My buddy found this. This was the days before internet. So he found in the back of a hunting magazine this advertisement for this place to go hog hunting. And we picked it because it was so cheap. And there was a reason why. And we went down to the southern part of Texas, showed up down there. There was a trailer house that looked like it was abandoned sitting on this property. This guy came out and he had a beer bottle stuck in every pocket. And it was 3 o'clock in the afternoon and he could hardly talk or walk. And I thought, this is going to be interesting. But the next day when we were going to go hunting, I'll tell this story. He said that food was provided. That was part of the deal that we were paying for. So we didn't eat dinner that night. He never came out of the trailer house. We didn't have breakfast the next morning. It was getting to be lunch, and he woke up. And so my friend said to him when he came out of the trailer house, well, I thought food was provided. And he said, you boys ain't killed it yet. So we were going to have to just eat the hogs that we killed. And if you've ever dealt with feral hogs before, you clean them and it's like they got more worms in them than there is hog meat, you know. So anyway, that was interesting. But so he says to us, he said, yeah, I'm going to have old Bill take you down there and he's going to drop you off and then you're going to walk down there and then he's going to come pick you up and you better listen good because where he's taking you, because you don't want to get lost because, I mean, there's cactuses down there that are 8 foot tall. You can't see anything. Everything is going to stick you or bite you down there. And so he said to listen good. So old Bill was this older guy and he had, I would call more of like a Cajun accent. And if you ever listen to these guys, you cannot understand anything they're saying, because he was going to give us directions of where we had to walk for miles and where he was going to pick us up. And so it started out like this. Yeah, I'm going down there and come back around and she didn't burn a king. And then you turn and then you go up and go around there, my car and darn vacation, mongo bunny, she so fancy. And I sit there and I had a look on my face and I said, now what is that again? He's like, and they look at you like you're an idiot. You go down there and you come on by there, turn around there, then you go up and then you fire in the gang and phone. And you just sit there and you go, okay. And you just smile. But one thing I got from him, he said, you turn down there and you come over the hill and you stand down there and there's gonna be a tank. There's a tank. I said, tank. And he's like, you go stay there, the tank. And I go, okay, I got that. I know what a tank is. I know what he said. We got to go down there and bum, bum, shiny, punky, pull to the tank. So we went down there and we did all those things and we walked for miles and this is hours and we went hog hunting and we didn't get anything. And then we got down there and I said, I think this is where he's saying that we need to be. But I looked and I said, there's nothing but this mud hole down here. There's a pond down here, but I see no tank at all. And so I said, we're lost. We're something is wrong. So we need to backtrack or do something. And my friends were like, no, this is 100 degrees out. And they said, well, this must be the way, though, because we've stayed on the road. And I said, but this is just a pond. And so we just kept on going. Well, old Bill, he came down around there and picked us up. And I said, and he's like, you're not going there, man. And somehow he was upset. I knew that much. And he was looking for us and driving around. And I said, well, I never saw a tank. I said, we saw back there, there was a pond. And he said, a tank. And I said, that was the tank. And he said, tank. And that was what, and so we went back and the other guy could speak a little bit of English. And I said, a tank? That was a pond. And he said, that's a tank. So I found out down there, because I've asked other people, they call a pond, a mud hole that cattle are drinking out of, that's called a tank to them. That's not a tank to me. And so you've got people that are supposedly speaking the same language that cannot communicate because you call things something different. I was not looking for a tank. A tank has got metal sides to me, holds water, something is a windmill, something a pump is pumping into it. That's not what I had envisioned. I did not think it was going to be a mud hole. And it's the same thing when it comes to these love languages, that you think that you are speaking your love language to somebody, and you know, and they're understanding it, and they have no idea what you are saying to them. They really don't. And so what makes it difficult is that inside of each one of these love languages, you have different, I will call them dialects. Because you think that, you know, by doing this with somebody, then you're showing that you love them. And they're still not quite understanding it because their love language is quality time. And so it looks different to different people. And we're going to look at this today, that it's different between men and women. So you've got these dialects underneath of that. You've got, I would say, togetherness, and that's quality activities. And then you have talking, and that's quality conversation. So you have these, I would say, are the two biggest dialects, if you can, you know, kind of follow my train of thinking, underneath of quality time. And I'll say this when it comes to togetherness. That is, of course, being around the other person, just being around other people. And I will have people that will say this in some shape or form, and I've heard this before, and even some of the marriage seminars that we will go to, they'll say, you know, I don't spend much time around my family, but what little time I do, I spend in quote-unquote quality time. Quality time. And I just always wonder, what is exactly quality time? Because sometimes I believe that this can be an excuse. Is it an excuse? Because we say, well, I don't spend much time around my family, but when I do, it's quality time. Now, if it's quality time, then it's quality time. But what is quality time? That means, well, you know, I got my sit down by my wife and we turn the television on and we watch television. That's quality time. I'm spending around her. And if her love language is quality time, she will say, that is what you're trying to do in that? I thought you were just watching television. Well, I let you run the remote for 10 minutes, so isn't that good enough? I was trying to tell. And you can spend time with somebody, but you're not actually with them. Because all time has the same quality to it. And so what I'm saying in that is that the excuse that, well, I'm around that person, and maybe you're a retiree. I'm around that person 24/7 even. You can be around that person and spend that much time, but it is not actually quality time. So when it's talking about togetherness, when I'm talking about that, that has to do with, as I said, a focused attention. It's interaction. That is what somebody needs. It means that you're doing something together and we are giving our full attention to the other person when we're doing it. And it's spending time together in a common pursuit. And this communicates that you care about each other and that you enjoy being with the other person. And you like doing things together in this quality time. Not just two warm bodies that are right beside each other doing, you know, whatever it is, sitting on the couch or in the vehicle. You're actually doing something that is quality time in that. And I will tell you this, one of man's greatest needs is recreational companionship. So if somebody ever asks you, what is one of men's, you know, biggest things that they need? Men, what do they got to have? And this is it. So when we're talking about quality time as a love language, it's not just for people that have that love language. Of course, as I've said in the past, this is for everybody. And this is something that men need. It's biblical. Ecclesiastes 9:9 says, enjoy life with your wife, whom you love, all the days of this life. Solomon says, if I can give you any advice, he says, spend time with your wife. Because this is one of men's greatest needs, because it is how God wired men. It's how he wired them. You can see it in Genesis 2:18. It says, the Lord God said, it is not good for the man to be alone. And he's really saying, because he's probably going to get into trouble. So I'm going to make a, what does the Bible say? A helper suitable for him. And women look at this and they don't like it. Especially you got the feminist movement. They're like, well, helper, I don't even like that word. I'm just nothing but a helper just to be here for him. It's more than that. It is having somebody that is your companion, that is there for you. As I said, my love language is not quality time. It's acts of service, big time. But I still respond as a man to quality time. And Stacy has known this our whole entire marriage. Even way back when we were first married, that makes it sound old, way back in the day, you know. And it's been some years now. And, you know, I'll work on a vehicle, and especially if it's going to be something that I am dreading and it's hard, she will come out there and just be there. Now, she doesn't know what I'm doing or how I'm doing it, or she can't really help in any way, but she will just be there and sit and be, I don't know what you want to call it, moral support. And especially if I'm underneath of that vehicle and I'm laying on my back, she hands me tools. She is really good at handing me tools. And so she'll hand me tools and that's it. And she doesn't really say too much. She just sits there and waits and then will help me like drag a transmission out from underneath of there or something when the time is right. But she's there. And so guys need that because we are just wired that way. And I will say this though, having to find things that both of you enjoy doing together. And that means that you have to compromise. It's not just always doing your thing. You both have to compromise in doing that. And so if you're going to spend quality time with somebody else, and it's that togetherness, that means you're going to do something that you probably don't like doing. But that's not the point. Because as the scripture we started out in said that we need to put somebody's interest, somebody else's best before our own. And so it's not always about what you want. So I have walked through greenhouses and I don't know how many hours I have logged into this. And I've told you, I don't care about plants. Okay? I don't. The only thing I can care is whether I can run over them with a lawnmower and it will chop them off. That's the only thing. You know, like I'm thinking, well, the mulch them. That's the only thing I think about plants. But my wife loves them. And so I will go and she gives me all this information on different plants and everything. And I go, that's interesting. And there are things that I've learned. And, she's taught me what the difference is between a weed and a flower is and those types of things. So I don't mow them over. And on the other side of that, my wife has been to a lot of gun shows, a lot of them. And she has walked hundreds of thousands of miles at gun shows. and walking around, and she'll say stuff like, "This one is really cute. That one's really pretty." Yeah, I guess it is. It's pretty. This one's got flowers on it. She has a gun, a handgun that I bought her that was custom engraved with flowers on it, okay? Because it's pretty. It's got flowers on it. And she doesn't necessarily wake up and say, "We're going to the gun show today. I'm ready." But she does it. Because why? Because that's quality time. And that doesn't just happen for somebody that's their love language. But I read this one time, and I don't know where I found it. There's three essentials when it comes to quality activities. The first one is that at least one of you wants to do it. Somebody has to want to do it, okay? If you're doing something that both of you hate, don't do it, all right? And that has happened before, because there has been couples that I have known that have done things, and I'll say to them, "How did that go?" And they say, both of them will say, "It was just terrible, horrible." I say, "Why did you do that for?" And they say, "I don't know, because somebody told us it might be fun, but neither one of us wanted to do it." Well, then you probably aren't going to enjoy it. The second thing is the other is willing to do it. Somebody else is willing to do what somebody wants to do. But the third thing is the most important, that both of you know why that you are doing it. Both of you understand that. And that is to express love by being together. Because I would say this, I don't know how to exactly write it down here, but the activity is the vehicle that creates the sense of togetherness. All right? And I put this picture together, if you can kind of follow me on this. On one side, I got point A, the other side, point B. And for some of us guys, going from point A to point B in a straight line is the ultimate goal. I will use the analogy of traveling. Okay, I'm more chilled out on this the older that I get, but when we were a younger couple and we had young kids and we were traveling to point A to point B, I had it down to the second what it should take us. And so we would get to the gas station, I would run it till we're on fumes. Sometimes we'd have to push it into the gas station because you don't want to stop too much because that adds to the time. And then I would tell the girls, "You have 96 seconds to use the restroom. Go." And from that, it was miserable because everybody just had to do their thing. You know, one of our daughters, when she was younger and she was potty trained, she wet her pants because she couldn't get into the bathroom and back enough. And she was looking at stuff in there. And so she came back out, and, you know, with Stacy, and then she ended up wetting her pants. And so I realized how miserable that was because, of course, if you've traveled, and I will use, you know, men versus women here, it's just kind of the way it works out. I don't see a lot of women that are like timing somebody going to the bathroom, you know, but you will have women that will just want to what? They want to stop and they want to look around. Like, look at that place. Let's stop and just look at it. And you're thinking, what? That's going to add to our time. But let's just go in and look around and see what's in there. Nothing that we need. I know that. But this is the point, that it is not about getting from point A to point B, whatever that is, that we're going to spend quality time. So we're going to go to the movies. Let's go to the movies. They're going to start at 7:30. We need to go eat. We're going to get the movie. We're going to watch the movie. We're going to be out of there. We're going to be home, and we're going to be in bed by 10. Okay, let's just get this done. And the other person feels like, oh, my goodness. All this, I would call it meandering around or just lost, it seems like, that you're just like, this stuff has value. This is the way that my mind thinks about it. So all that stuff that you're doing that's added the extra stuff in there, that is important. And so when you're going on a vacation and it's the things that you don't plan and the detours that you take or whatever that is it. My girls, when we took very few vacations ever, when they were kids. I think I've told you this before. As a pastor, every time I left town that we took a family vacation, somebody in the church died. Every time. I'm not kidding you. It got to be where it wasn't even a joke that if we said that we were going to leave and go on vacation as a family, everybody was talking about who was going to be dead in the next week. And we had somebody that died unexpectedly when we were on vacation. And so we would have to just end the vacation, come back home because we had to do the funeral. It really turned into something. So anyway, we didn't do a lot of vacations when the girls were little. But in that, some of the most crazy things that you did not plan and were bad that happened on the vacations, because our vacations, I don't know, maybe everybody else like this too, were just most of the time one catastrophe or wreck after the other. Something came up. And the girls now talk about those memories more than they talked about the fun things that we did when we got there. Because we actually did do the thing when we got there. And they're like, hey, remember when we went to so-and-so and that was that place that had the arcade and had the throwing balls and then we all got pink eye? And that was true. And they all got pink eye. And because these nasty kids were touching these balls that you roll up there into the game. And so then we're on vacation and they all had pink eye and then we all got it. And it was like, And all that stuff still has value in it. I read this quote one time. It says, if you want to make it till you're gray, play. And couples that I know that have been together for years and years, and they're old, that's one of the things that they've made a priority is doing things together. It's that togetherness. So that's one of the dialects, I would call it. The next one is quality conversation. And that is when two sympathetic, dialogues where two individuals are sharing their experiences, thoughts, feelings, desires in a friendly, uninterrupted context. That's the definition of that. And so this is one of women's greatest needs is conversation. So guys is what? Recreational companionship. That's what guys need. If you would ask women when it comes to the quality time, it's not so much that doing, it is this talking in there. Because women are more emotional. They are able to, because of the way that God created them, to be able to verbalize their feelings. And so they want to be able to talk to somebody. And that is a successful transmission of information and feelings. And this includes listening, talking, and understanding. All these things that are in this. And I will pick on guys here because a lot of times this doesn't come naturally to us. But for some people, it doesn't come naturally at all. Do you ever have somebody that asks you how you are and you think that they actually care and they're going to listen to you? This happens all the time when I'm working at the post office. People say, how are you? And you are so naive that you think that they actually are going to listen to you. And you say, they interrupt you and then they talk about what's going on in their life for the next 20 minutes. That's just a springboard for them to then talk about themselves. They could care less about anything. And you might try to add something in there. Well, I know that. Not about you. It's about me right now. Okay. I really don't care about what's going on with you. And so that happens in a relationship, whether it's with your kids or with your spouse, that you can ask them, how are you today? Or what's your day been like? And then that person, and it's their love language, and this is their dialect, and they're like, oh, here it goes. I'm going to be able to get my love tank filled because I'm going to have somebody listen to me, and they get cut off, and then you tell them how terrible your day was. And their love tank is absolutely just depleted. It's even worse because they think they're going to get it filled up. And in that you don't do that at all. And so that means listening to her heart. And I learned this years ago at a marriage conference that we went to. It's not fixing her problem. They had a whole entire day of this conference that we were there for a week on just this for guys. Colossians 3:19 says, husbands, love your wives and do not be harsh with them. And so with guys, when our wives are talking a lot of times, we listen to them. And we're thinking, how do I fix this problem? What problem does she have? How am I going to fix it? Because I don't want to listen to this anymore. So that means I'm going to cut this problem out. I'm going to kill it. So let me hear this right. You said that this happened. So now I'm going to do this. And women will say to you, and my wife has said this, I don't need you to fix anything or do anything about it. I just want you to listen and hear me out. Well, then what am I going to do about it? That's nothing. Let me know. I'll do something about it. I'm going to fix it. And so what Stacy and I have learned in our relationship is this. For years and years, we've done this. Next time she needs to talk to you, I'll ask her, do you need me to listen or do you need me to fix it? That's what I'll actually ask her. Is this something that I need to just listen to or just do I need to fix it? And she will tell me, you need to just listen. And I'll say, okay, so I just listen to what she says. And I don't think about, while she's talking, how I'm going to fix this problem. And there's other times that she will say, this is a fix-it problem that I'm talking about here. We need to come up with a solution. And so we have to actually verbally do that, even to this day at some points. And we'll get kind of lax in this. And so she'll be telling me something, and I'm thinking, I'll be interrupting her saying, well, this is what we need to do. This is how we need to fix it. This is what we need. And she'll say, stop. Stop it. I am trying to just tell you what I'm feeling and my frustration. And I'll say, okay, I don't need to fix this. And so the first dialect is togetherness. The second one is that we're going to have this quality time by listening to the other person. And I would say this because I was a little bit confused about this when we went to the seminar on the five love languages. There's an important distinction between words of affirmation and quality time. Gary Chapman, when we listened to him, said, words of affirmation focus on what we are saying, whereas quality conversation focuses on what we are hearing. That's the difference. Words of affirmation is saying, you can do it. Cheering works. Cheering you on. I'm proud of you. You always do the best when this, you know, I use the illustration of our friend that his wife says, you're the man when he does something. That's words of affirmation. But when you have this side of it with quality time and a dialect is conversation, then that means that you're going to listen. And that is speaking to somebody's heart, and that's hearing from somebody's heart. So that means that you're listening to what they're saying, and you're not trying to fix the problem. You're saying things like, I understand. I hear that you're frustrated in this. I understand. Oh, you know, you're asking questions about it or whatever that is in that conversation, whatever that context is, that you're actually listening. Because quality conversation is about listening to what's being said. Proverbs 18:13 says this, he who answers before listening, that is his folly and his shame. I like the way that the message says it. It's a little bit, it's not by word, but it says answering before listening is both stupid and rude. Really gets the point across there. Because communication experts state that most people hear about only 20% of what's being said. 20%. So when somebody is there talking to you, you hear only 20% of it. That is why it would be a lot nicer if you just had that closed caption when they're talking. That's why I do like text in that way, because you can go back and you can read it and say, well, is that what they were saying? Only 20%. And that is why that you are listening. You know, it's been said before, and you've probably heard it, people have two ears and one mouth. So that means, you know, you need to open your ears and you need to shut your mouth. And that is that you are listening, not talking, when somebody else is trying to share in this. And I would say this, that when it comes to quality conversation, listening takes work. There is a cost involved in this. Because you have to sit there and you have to give them your attention. And you're focused on that person, whether it's your spouse or your grandkid, whoever that is. And to listen, you must put a focus on the person that's speaking. And that means that you need to, you know, not be staring at the television or doing something else, that you're actually listening to that person. Because what does it, you know, get chopped up into the percentage if you're only hearing 20% of that person when you're actually sitting there and listening to them? When you're doing something else, what do you hear? 3%? 5%? 1%? It takes cost. And we had a Bible school teacher that said this one time. He said, when we went through a marriage class, he said, you have to communicate or your marriage will disintegrate. You have to communicate or your marriage will disintegrate. And that is that love tank isn't going to be filled. It's going to run empty. And then you're going to be pushing this relationship. Or you're just, as I said a couple weeks ago, you're going to give up on it, abandon it, and say, we can't keep going forward. He doesn't love me. I don't love him. Whatever the situation is that we're going to say that we're going to get out of it, and we're just done. because it's been running on empty for a long time. When it comes to quality conversation, this is from the book. Gary Chapman suggests this to improve listening skills. He says, number one, maintain eye contact, that you're actually looking at that person when you're talking to them. And that means that to that person that you're giving them your full attention when you're talking to them. Now, of course, if you're driving down the road, he's not saying that you're going to be dangerous in this, but that you understand that you're looking at that person. The second thing is don't attempt to do something, you know, while you're listening. As I said, if you're watching TV, doing a project, whatever that is, and you're listening, that person feels like that you're not listening, even if you are, because my wife says, I can multitask. Well, I know that she can, but I don't know if she's actually listening to me or not. I say to her, are you listening to me? And she's like, yes, I can do more than one thing. And she can, but I don't realize that she's listening to me. Number three, listening and watch for feelings. Ask for confirmation. Are you feeling angry because of this? And number four, he talks about to observe some type of body language, because as we talked about last week, that somebody had put together that pie graph, that a lot of our communication is body language when we're speaking to somebody. And it may reveal a message which is completely different from what is being said. That is the downfall of texting, because I will read most texts like somebody is mad at me. I'll say, especially if it's like, you know, one of my daughters sometimes, I'll be like, what? And I'll say to Stacy, I'll read it this way. And she's like, well, but it's, if you read it this way and don't emphasize on that, I'm like, well, that does sound a little bit different. Because what we say, and especially with our body language, and what we're actually trying to say are two different things sometimes. And the fifth one he has is refuse to interrupt. That when that person is talking, you don't interrupt them. And I would say this, though, as we close today, time with somebody is important. Because, as I said, each one of these love languages are scriptural. I will say this, too, that when I've taught this over the years, I've added and added to it, and it's more than what's in this book here. So people will read this book, and they'll listen to what I'm saying, and they'll say, where in the world did you get that from? Because I didn't find that in the book. A lot of what I have here, I have personally added to, so it's not in the book. So they'll say, is there a second book, or did you get it from someplace else? It's just mine. But I will say this, looking at Scripture, God desires to spend time with us. That is who He is, and that is the way that He has created us. Because one of the most repeated phrases in the Old Testament is, I am with you. I've got some references up here, and this is just some that I picked out. There's a lot more of Him saying, I am with you. The people of the Old Testament, and He is with us today also. In the New Testament, God went even further. He came in person. He came to this earth as a human being to be around people. That is how God is trying to say, I am trying to be with you. And Isaiah predicted the Messiah coming, and He would be called what? Emmanuel, which means, we sing it at Christmas time, God is with us. Isaiah 7:14. God says, this is how important it is to me that I'm going to send, and it's mind-boggling, I understand, in the Trinity, He says, I'm going to send my Son, but I'm sending myself. Because the question is, what makes Christianity different from all other faiths? And that is that God became one of us. That Jesus Christ was fully man and He was fully God. And Confucius, Buddha wasn't, you know, he wasn't God. Only Jesus Christ was. And then if you look at the New Testament, Jesus modeled this for us. In the way that we give the gift of your time, because He ministered to the multitudes. That is true. But if you read the New Testament, He set aside and invested extra time in certain individuals. Peter, James, and John. Really, I'll make the argument, of the 12 disciples, these are the three that He put the most time into. He was the closest to. God Himself only was on this planet and worked with a small group of people. You would think that if God was going to come to this planet, that He would go to the highest peak, and Jesus did speak, as I said, to the multitudes, and you would never spend time with the people because you're just trying to reach the most that you possibly can. And that's not how Jesus was. He said, I'm going to come and I'm going to spend the time with certain people. Was that preordained? I don't know. Well, on the other side of eternity, these three guys that he spent the most time with. And I've spoken about it before from the pulpit here, but these 11 guys that were remaining, these guys flipped the world upside down. They went and they shared the gospel and the truth of the resurrection, and it's still going on today, 2,000 years later. And even if you're somebody that's out there and you're an atheist, you don't believe in Jesus, you would have to admit that these individuals shaped the world that we live in today by the message that they shared. And I believe it's because Jesus put the time in with them. And you can go on, you know, with Mary and Martha and Mary Magdalene, and you got Nicodemus. These were all people in the New Testament that he spent time with. And if you look at it, you know the story. Jesus shared meals, travels, experiences, and extended conversations. Did he know that he was only going to have 3.5 years of ministry? That he was only going to be here for 33 years? And if you're thinking about that, you're like, man, we got to get going. We got to get from point A to point B. We got to do the next thing, disciples. Come on, let's go. And you got 97 seconds to go to the bathroom. Let's go. We got to get on it. He didn't operate like that. If you read the New Testament, he spent time with people. He seemed like he had all eternity to spend with these people. He was really chill at times. And that is because I believe that God wants to spend time with us. And he was showing these people in that he loved them. You want to show that you love people, you spend quality time with them. You spend time with your kids, you spend time with your grandkids. One of the things that caused us to move up here, and it's the biggest thing I would say, is to spend time with our grandkids. Not that we don't care about spending time with our daughters, don't get me wrong. But we moved up here because one of my daughters said to me, she said, you know, Dad, it's just the way that it was when we grew up, but you were so busy at the church and you put so much time into those church people. And anything that they had going on, you were willing to drop things and family vacations and everything else. And she said, we want it to be about, in not a selfish way, but about our time and spending time with grandkids and us. And you can't do that in the environment and what you're doing and how it's all been established. And I will say that's my fault. That's my fault in that, of not having healthy boundaries over the years and telling people in the church, no. We have other things going on, and our family is going to come first this weekend or this week or whatever that time is, or this evening. I'm sorry, but no. Easier said than done, though, when you're dealing with that many people and all the things that go on. And so in that, we made that decision to invest our time, because people aren't going to know that you love them and you care about them if you don't spend any time around them. And I understand in life we get busy and there's distance that are put in with families and there's no way to help that. That's just part of life. But you also know the reality and the consequences of that. If we haven't been up here for the last 2 years that we have, our grandson wouldn't have the relationship with us that he does. It wouldn't be there. Because if we saw him once every 6 months, which would be the reality of that, or maybe even less, because it's just when you're a pastor, you are on call 24/7 and you don't get away for the weekends because you work on Sunday, you know, morning, you can't just be gone that weekend. It just wouldn't have happened. And that is that you're going to spend time with people. And then from that, the early church learned to follow Jesus' example. And they gave the gift of time. And that goes back to the verse that we heard today in Acts 2:46 that you can see, and you can see it in other places in Romans and 1 Peter, where these disciples then went and they spent time with other people, and they were breaking bread with these people. They were eating together. They were doing different activities together. They spent time together. It drew those people to Christianity because they were hearing the truth about Jesus and the stories and all that that goes along with it, because they were putting time into other people. And as I said, all of us have a love tank. All of us do. And the purpose is to experience something together when it comes to this quality time. To walk away feeling that, you know, telling yourself that they care about me, they're willing to do something with me that I enjoy, and he did it with a positive attitude. And all those things. That is love. And some people, this fills their love tank. But I will say, as I've said over and over again, this applies to everybody, not just people that have this as a love language. And so, asking you this question this week, am I giving, you know, enough quality time to other people? Is your spouse or your grandkid or whoever that is asking to do things with you? Is your spouse or this other person offering to do things with you or to help you with things? Or are they complaining that you never do anything with me? If you hear this from people, then they are trying to get their love tank filled. Because they will say, and I have been guilty of this, I've had people say to me, hey, I'll help you with that, or I'll go with you to do that. And I'll say, no, I don't need your help. I don't need you to go along. I don't need it, you know, and I don't realize that what they're saying is, I want to spend quality time with you. When I was mentoring young boys, they would do that. Sometimes they would call me and say, hey, I know that you're going to go do this. Can I go with you? And I would tell them, no, I'm just going to go run and do it. Well, I'll help you. No, I don't need any help. Because in my mind, I was thinking, if I take them from point A to point B, I don't know what that's all going to involve. And I just want to do A and B. Boom, boom, get back. And then I have to tell myself, nope. They're going to go with me, and it's going to be something else. I have learned this with my grandson. He has went with me when I have been helping Matt, and you have seen him here at church. He is a busybody, for sure. Most of the time, I'm trying to watch him so he doesn't kill himself, okay? And so when I take him to do things, I'm like, it makes everything, I was thinking about this, 10,000 times harder? 10,000 times harder. And I think, oh my goodness, just to do this, I could get this done and go do it and get back. And, you know, and I have to tell myself, that's not the journey. That's not it. It's all this other stuff that we're going to be doing, that we're going to get out and we're going to throw rocks. We're going to do other things that have nothing to do with the task at hand. But that's what we're going to choose to do at this moment. Then I have to tell myself, that's why I'm here. That's what I'm doing. And this is quality time. So we're going to do things and see how far that we can spit, you know, in a spitting contest or whatever it is at this moment, because that is what we're doing. And sometimes, you know, and I lost that, or I didn't have that vision with my own girls. I wish I would have, because you're always like, We're doing this, and we need to get this done, and then that's the next thing. Instead of enjoying those moments, and I see Jesus as somebody that was like, you know what? Yeah, let's just do this. Let's do this, man. Well, this is ridiculous. This isn't adding anything on that. This isn't productive. No, it's not. Not in the world sense, but it is productive because I'm spending time with you, and I'm making this a priority. And so that is that quality time. And so that is why that will fill up anybody's love tank, actually. I saw this for ideas for couples. And I think actually we got this from a marriage seminar that we went to. It said, plan or schedule dates with one another. That might be an idea. Schedule a weekend just for the two of you. Don't change it for any other event. And you don't really even have to go anywhere. You can just do that at home. Walk around the block together, something that's simple like that. Do chores together, like dishes or weeding. You know, it may not sound like quality time, but it can be in those situations. When you're in the car together, turn off the radio and spend time with each other. And, you know, spending 20 minutes a day in just daily dialogue. When it comes to families, you know, tell them a story. It can be a read one or something that you've even made up. And I that probably wasn't the best way to say it, made up. But you know what? It's something from your past or something that's gone on. And you're telling that story. You're actually talking. I hate where we went to in our culture, because I had an older gentleman told me this years ago, and he is so right. He told me this 40 years ago, probably. He said, maybe it was about 30 because of the technology and context here, but he said, you know, back in the day, people used to sit around a campfire or around a fire, and, you know, a fire in their house and the fireplace, and everybody looked at each other and they told stories at night. He said, that's what they did. And he said, and then there was the radio. And he said, everybody sat around in the living room when he said, I was a kid, and you had the radio on. And he said, and we listened to that, but we all looked at each other and we listened to these stories. And he said, and then he said, I saw the invention of the television. And he said, and you know what the problem with that is? He said, everybody sat in the living room. They didn't talk to each other anymore. They didn't listen to each other anymore. They didn't look at each other anymore. He said, and then he said, they have these things called computers. And he said, and this was when, like, they were first starting to come out. And he said, and I don't know. He's like, it's a television thing that you type on. And so you're talking or typing. And he said, and then they put it in another room. And he said, the problem with that is that you got mom in one room watching TV. You got, you know, kid in the other room on this computer. And he said, they're not even the same room. And now even taking it one step further, you've got these things that these kids put on their eyes, you know, these visual hoods that I don't know what you're looking at in there, but it's like a video or something. And so now you're not even looking, you're not even in the same room, you're not talking, and now you got a hood on your eyes and you're in the other room. Where that has taken us. You talk about quality time and how that's been taken away. And so turn off the TV or computer, iPod, or I don't even know what you call them anymore. You know, the Pong or Atari, I don't know what you... But you know what I'm saying? The thing that keeps you occupied and you're not even in that same room with that person. You're not around each other. I would say this one. This one was something that was important to me and Stacy when we had our girls, and that was the time that we eat together. And so we ate at the table. We shared what was going on during the day. We tried to do this. It didn't go very good, but we would say, what's one, you know, we had these things written out. What's one thing that happened today that you can be thankful for? Or whatever that was, you know, in that. And so they would read that. And of course, when they got to be teenagers, they're like, this is so stupid. But we still did that. We still sat down at the table when we talked and we ate together. I would say this, set aside family night. Let the kids come up with some type of activity. Maybe that's to grow a garden or some family project together, or just to go for walks. And as I said last week, this is why this is so important. There is a danger with this. I'll say it again. If you don't fill up somebody's love tank, this is what's going to happen. It's going to be filled up by something or somebody that shouldn't be. And there's going to be some really big consequences that will come from that. Just like I said last week, if you fill up your tank full of water, how far are you going to go? What are you going to do to your motor? It's going to take some time to restore that and fix that. And maybe because of the rust, it can never be restored. And so I've seen people that haven't put time into their family, and somebody else has, and there's consequences that come from that. Because if you don't schedule time for one another, you won't have the time. And then you won't have one another. That is how that works. If this just came to my mind this morning, but you remember that song, Cats in the Cradle, from the 1970s? And the song, I can't even tell you who sang it. And I think he was kind of a one-hit wonder, if I remember right, because I don't remember him. But even as a kid, I understood that song. And in that song, those of you who can remember it, it talks about this young boy that to his dad all the time that says, hey, dad, can we go out and can we play football? And he says, you know, I don't have time for that, but we'll do it. You know, I will do it with you. Well, dad, can you do this? And he's busy with work. And he says, you know, I would love to if I could find the time, but I don't. So we'll do it though. I'll have time for you. And then he gets older and he starts to realize that, he's at the end of his life. And he says to his son, he calls him up and he says, I wish that we could get together and we could find the time. And he said, oh, Dad, I would love to, but the kids are sick, and they have the flu and work's just really tough. And so I can't spend any time with you, but I'll sure love to talk to you again sometime. And he says, my boy grew up just like me. And he says, and the last line is, if I remember right, how I'm paraphrasing here, but he says, son, if you can find the time, that'll be, we'll spend some time, that'll be great. And so he's the one that's begging for time, but he never invested time into his son. And so his son has no relationship with him. And now his son is just doing the same thing that he saw his father do. And then you're wanting this whole last 30, 40 years with this child that you have neglected, and there is no relationship. And now that you want this, and it's not there. I see that so much. And I see that especially with men. And I will say sometimes that older generation, because that World War II generation, you know what I'm talking about. These guys came home and they worked hard and they built businesses and they did things. And these guys were just something else as far as what they were doing. But they didn't put a lot of time into their families, unfortunately. And I know that some of you fall into, that baby boomer, but that generation is something else. You've got the hippies and all that movement from the 60s and everything that came from that. And these people then started to teach in universities and take our country and our culture in a direction that we're now experiencing the consequences from. And I believe personally it's because that they were some good, hardworking men that had good morals, Christian men even, and I've seen this, but they didn't put any time into their kids. And their kids went, whew. They had some crazy thinking and ways and everything else. And because I've seen it in the church, because I've ministered long enough, I've seen that generation, that World War II generation come and go, and their kids are an absolute disaster. And I've had people, by their own words and testimonies of that generation, especially dads, that said, man, I wish I'd have spent more time with my kids. Back in the day, I wish I would have done that. But there was always more work to be done, other things, and it was the time and day that, you had kids and your wife raised them, and you went out and we were making money and doing that, but I wish I could go back and I could change that, but you can't. If you don't schedule that time with somebody, then it's going to be gone. And how you spend your time proves what's most important to you. How you spend your time. So I've been given an assignment every week, and this is the assignment this week. Look and pay attention to what your spouse is offering you. If you don't know what their love language is, then just watch them. And what they're trying to offer you is what their love language is sometimes. So if they're saying, hey, I want to spend time with you, I want to do this with you, and you're like, no, you're just going to be a burden. I need to go get this done. I don't have time for you to go along. They're saying to you, I want to spend some quality time with you. If your grandkids, your child is saying, this is what I'm needing, and it could be the other love languages, whatever that is, just words of affirmation saying, it'd be nice if I heard that, good job once in a while, or whatever that they're saying, and you hear it as a complaint. That's what they're saying is, I need this. I need this in my life. And so the other assignment I have is this. Who would benefit from you giving the gift of quality time? Who would benefit? Is it your spouse? Is it your child? Is it your grandchild? Is it the neighbor boy? Who is it that you're saying, I'm actually going to give them quality time and they're going to benefit from it? And as I said, that in my mind, it used to be that it had to be this constructive certain thing, and it had to be checking off these marks A, B, C to make it quality time, because you're spending time with this person. And I have learned being around these young men that I've been around over the years that don't have fathers, it doesn't have to be all that. It really doesn't. It just means that you are making them a priority. You're spending time with them, and you're saying, I am making you important this afternoon. and we'll do whatever that you want to do. And some of these things I've told you before, like that they're into video games. I don't understand video games. I just didn't, you know, that this was my error. And so I have learned to play video games with them and their criticisms and them laughing at me because I don't know how to do this stuff, because it's not like the old Atari with the joystick, you know, and you're killing the aliens and then then you go outside. You can play for hours in these things, and I don't know if you've ever seen some of these, but you're moving, you can look around, you know, you move around like this and you shoot and do all this stuff. And most of the time I'm either looking at the ground, walking into things, or I'm looking straight up and they're like, no, you have to do this. And there's too many remotes, joystick things, but I really don't enjoy it. And I get frustrated by it, but that doesn't make any difference, because from point A to point B is not winning the game or even doing that. It is just spending time. And people benefit from that. We do have the 5 love language tests and quizzes in the back. So I think that we're out of singles today. So if we have any singles that are wanting them, we'll have to make some more copies. But does anybody want to admit that their love language is quality time? Anybody here? Is that their love language? Okay, Cassie's. Okay. So both of yours is quality time. What? Oh, yeah. Yeah, and if you're like a lot of people, like our friends from Malaysia would tell me that they would make fun of me because I can't even speak English correctly to them and my tenses of verbs and everything, and they have to correct me. And I think sometimes with our love language, we feel like that even though that's my love language of acts of service, I muddle all that up even. So, yeah, so a lot of times you won't have, I will say this, two people that will have the same love language in a relationship. Of course, it happens, but it's most of the time rare, because I think it's because I don't understand how it all works, but when you are attracted to somebody and you marry that person and then you go, what was I thinking? Because they are the complete opposite in so many ways. And a lot of times I believe that is the way that God works, because if you're both the same in so many things, then that's just not the way that God works, because you complete each other. You are one that way scripturally. So that kind of falls into love languages also. But who would benefit from you giving quality time? Let's close the word of prayer. Lord, thank you that you are a God of quality time, that you want to spend time with us. And whatever that looks like, just on a daily basis in your word and through, we've talked this morning through worship, or just even in silence, Lord, and just the quietness in our spirit. And Lord, I thank you for being that person. And Lord, I pray that we would see that model that Jesus had for the disciples, he had for people when he walked on this earth, that we would understand that one of the most precious things that we have is our time, and that we would give that to other people. And Lord, not in a way that we would think that we have just wasted it, that whether we believe, as we've talked this morning, whether it's a quality time or not, that the other person is benefiting just from us making them a priority because we're telling them that we love them. And so, Lord, I just I give you thanks for just your word and Gary Chapman and his book, that he falls in biblical concepts here. And I do believe that these 5 love languages, Lord, that you have for us. And so, Lord, I just pray that we would be sensitive to others and what they're needing, and we would put others' interests first, as Scripture says. We give you thanks in Jesus' name. Amen.